This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, happy Wednesday, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 9th, episode 1757, brought to you today by horselovers.com. Good morning, horse world.
Horse Nation.
This episode is Do Try This at Home.
Leslie, I'm...
Failure is always an option. Any result's a result, that's for sure.
Oh my gosh, it's going on right now.
I got no sleep last night. I didn't sleep at all.
You're like either really excited and proud, or you're like really nervous. Which one is it?
Both. I'm excitedly, proudly nervous. That's
well, there's nobody who could be more excited and more proud than Leslie's husband, Tommy, who just happens to be here. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning, you guys.
Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, my gosh. So talk to us about what's going on in your head right now, because tell us where Leslie is right now.
Well, Leslie is about an hour out from the changeover station number 3, all by herself, out in front by quite a bit.
Leslie's in the lead.
Yay! Dude, that's amazing. Yeah. Leslie is in the lead. She's so scrappy.
Yeah.
Now, Tommy, we got to ask you, is it appropriate that Leslie appears to have stopped at the Golden Meadows shopping mall?
I was going to bring that up. You know, they don't weigh her at each stop. They just weigh her one time so she can pick up whatever she wants.
Genius.
I'm assuming they sell wine at this place. That's the only reason she would stop there, I'm sure.
Now, I thought, there's a mall in the middle of Mongolia? What? Because she, what's it called? The Great Meadows or Golden Meadows Shopping Mall. Because when you get on the Adventurous website and you click all the way in and you satellite view it, it's a less than impressive mall.
Couple of yurts.
A couple yurts.
Right.
But if somebody's going to find it, it's going to be her.
I'll tell you, Tommy, I don't know about you. I think we woke up about the same time. I was up about 4 like I usually am, and I checked, and she seemed to be stuck at number 1. Everybody else had moved on, and she was stuck at, like, checkpoint 1. And she wasn't moving, and I thought, oh, that's not good. She got hurt already or something, and she just was not moving. And I think her GPS is a little wonky, don't you? Because all of a sudden then there were straight lines to 2, and she was in the lead. Straight line to 3, she was in the lead. I think her GPS is on and off.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. That actually happened at the race launch at the beginning on the first leg as well. Everybody else appeared to have taken off, and she was still hovering around the start flag. And then, you know, I don't know, 45 minutes in, maybe an hour and a half in, somewhere in there, all of a sudden she's in the middle of the pack close to the front. And I was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, it wasn't updating in real time like it was with everybody else. She was just all of a sudden way far up front. And apparently it happened again at the second changeover station. Which again is fine. As long as it's on this end and not that end. I mean, I would like her whereabouts known at least to the race organizers the entire time she's out there.
It's just a translation issue.
I noticed a lot of our live listeners are just joining in on the feed here. I think it was a little bit delayed. And we just want to mention that we have Leslie's husband, Tommy, on, and he was up all night. And I think We did, Devin Horn and I did a Facebook Live last night that you watched. Thank you so much. And a lot of other people watched. We're going to do that every night around 9 o'clock on the Horses in the Morning Facebook page. We're going to do a Facebook Live until this thing's over, giving you wrap-ups and updates and everything. It was a lot of fun. And I woke up a couple times last night and checked, and then her darn GPS kept getting stuck. And I was like, oh, of the one person to have a bad GPS, it would be Leslie.
So I don't question about the GPS, Tommy, is she's out in the middle of the wilderness and she's like, this GPS battery, does it go low? Do they have spares? Do they have a charger? What goes on? How does that work? I can't get my cell phone to last more than a half a day.
These devices are designed for exactly this type of thing. So in terms of reception, it's not going to be a problem. The batteries, she was required to bring backup batteries. I think she ended up going with 4 or 5 pair of lithium batteries. She said most, according to the previous races, most people go through about 3 sets of batteries during the race. So she's got backup batteries and backups for her backups. So she should be fine.
Okay, good.
Good.
Because, and so the other question I had while looking at this is, Leslie's at the shopping mall, the Golden Meadows shopping mall. And I mean, it's not like a mall that you would think of in the U.S. at Christmas time where there's like, cars driving around looking for parking spaces. This is like yurt. It's like a tent. Right. And that's the mall. Mm-hmm. But she has ridden to said mall. And she sleeps here because at some point they have to stop, right? So they just sleep where they stop, right?
Right. And you can sort of, as Devin was describing last night, you can beg shelter from people who are not involved in the race. And she said most people were really hospitable. You can throw your sleeping bag on the ground and sleep, tie your leg to your horse and go to sleep if you want in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there are lots of options aside from staying at the official changeover station. And Leslie and I discussed that possibility and there were, okay, well, only do that maybe if you're in the hunt near the end, or only do that if you're with a group. And we're one day in and she's already busted both of those pieces of recommendation, which just tells me, it just tells me where she's at. She's riding the wind, or she wouldn't have taken off from that last changing station.
Yeah, she only had
an hour left on the clock. And
they tweeted, actually, yeah. And you can follow all the tweets. Just go to Twitter and search for Mongol Derby Live, and you'll find it. And they're tweeting with initials. So on their website, they have the initials of everybody. We kind of made our own cheat sheet up here. And we're going to go over a little later in the show, in the 9:30 hour, we're going to go over the top 10 and kind of get the audience involved in all of their lives. We know a little bit about all of them. So we're going to kind of introduce the leaders as of day one. So you'll start to have more people you can know to follow. We're going to do that a little later in the show, but yeah, it's so funny that I didn't expect that. I don't know, you didn't either. All those weeks telling us, I'm just in it, I just want to go and finish, I'm just gonna have a good time.
No eventer, every eventer says that, but they all lie. Everybody wants to win. So the question is, what I was gonna get to in that question was, Tommy, what's our horse doing right now?
Oh yeah, how do they put their horse up at night?
Yeah, hopefully nothing. ideally not a thing. She's been taught how to hobble a horse with the rope and equipment she's been given. But there, people have told her and people have written that, even a hobbled horse can make their way 3 or 4 kilometers over the course of a night. So, that's her responsibility. And, that's one of the things, like when I read that tweet from Mongol Derby Live, that she had taken off with an hour left, I thought, I got to question that decision, but it's her decision. It's her race and she's got to figure it out. She's got to hold onto her horse. She's got to get some sleep and she's got to stay safe. And so she's decided that she's going to do that. And that's where her head is at, and I believe in her.
Amazing. You know what? You know what happened the day Leslie Wiley married you is she got a magical unicorn husband. You just are amazing.
Well, I got to tell you, I think she chose wisely because it looks like the mall has a couple of paddocks. So probably just throw the horse in one of those.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great. It would allow her to rest.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Tommy. I know you got to go to work. You actually have a job that you're trying to do during all of this adventure. We will definitely.
Right. I'm at work now.
Okay, good. We'll definitely be having you back. We'll try and get you involved in some of the Facebook Lives we do at night on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. And I know you'll be watching. We do appreciate that. And let's hope she keeps on riding.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate to sound like an American sports coach here, but, you know, it's like she's up 6 points and, you know, 8 minutes into a basketball game.
That's true.
You know, that's a great start. But it's a long race, and there's a lot that has to go right. So she's off to a great start. I'm super excited, but there's a lot of kilometers between her and the finish line. So everybody pay attention. Everybody follow along. And thank you for the support. Thank you so much.
No problem. Have a good one, Tommy.
Thank
we'll
you,
be
Tommy.
In touch.
All right, thanks.
How cool is all of that? And he is right. It's a 9-day, it's a 7 to 9 day race. So it's day one, but
I wonder if she was like, so question, if she would have stayed at the checkpoint where everybody else stayed, would she have, and she got there first, say she got there 15 minutes before the next person. Is this like a ride, an endurance ride where she gets to leave 15 minutes before the next person? Do they log their times or is it
that's
like
a good question? I'll ask Devin that tonight because I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if they all just ride out. I don't know if there's a starting time where none of them can leave before that time, or can they get up at like 5 a.m. and leave? I don't know.
And if they get up at 5 a.m. and leave, can the next person not leave until the until the time they logged in?
That's a good question.
I have questions.
And she, you know, she had an hour. Basically, they have to stop at, I think it's 8 o'clock their time. It's a 12-hour difference, by the way, to Eastern time us. So it's 12 hours ahead over there. So they have to quit at that certain time, no matter where they are. So if she's out, the risk you take by being an hour away from the end of the day and being at a checkpoint, is you could stop there. There's food, there's water, there's everything else. The risk you take is you get an hour out and there's nothing. So that tells me that she probably saw the same map we did and saw there was a shopping mall and headed out. That's my guess.
There's a mall. I'm going to the mall.
I'm going to the mall to have a Starbucks. I really need my latte. Well, we're going to talk more about this coming up, but we have a guest I want to get to. It's on my bucket list. Everybody that listens knows I have a long bucket list, but this is definitely one of the things that's on it. We talk to them every year. We have Amy from Walnut Hill in New York. It's one of the, or it is the biggest pleasure driving show in the country. It is so cool. I watch the pictures and the feeds from it every year, and we've had them on the driving show every year. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Good to hear you.
Hey, you're coming to us live. It started, right? Today.
That's correct. It has started 15 minutes ago.
Oh, wow. So what's happening right
now? It's not raining, which is the most important thing.
Oh, good. Was it raining?
It's a beautiful day, and it's going to be gorgeous for the next couple of days. So this morning we have ladies and gents single horse Meadowbrook Road Cart Progressive Obstacle Class. And then going on to reinsmanship and pleasure turnout, an afternoon turnout, and then afternoon classes. So it's a full day every day for the next 5 days.
And this is a pleasure driving show, which means for those that don't know anything about driving, this is where you have the opportunity. They have all different kinds of classes, but it's where you have the opportunity to not just get out your competition carriages, but to get out the really pretty ones and to get all dressed up, right?
Absolutely. A lot of folks who are interested in antiques like to come to this show as well, because the carriages have quite a history for themselves. And we've had carriages from the Rockefeller families and others with a lot of historical significance. And that's a lot of fun. And you can get to see them up close. you know, you can get to look at them and talk to the drivers and meet the horses. So it's a very kind of up close and personal show, which I think is fabulous.
You also have coaches?
We do. We have beautiful road coaches. These are the coaches that would be seen either kind of like old-fashioned taxis or private road coaches, which would have been owned by, you know, wealthy families. And the coaching division features both the public and the private coaches. They would have traveled these roads during the mid-19th century. And they are judged basically to have each team of four horses work well as a very disciplined unit, and how the appointments are on the coach and the groom's ability to sound the coach horn and go through obstacles. Yeah, so it's quite a gorgeous walk down a time that has long been gone.
And the coaches, for those that don't know, are the really big ones that you see where the people are sitting on the seats that are up above the the carriage compartment. And they're sitting about, what?
Right.
When you get up there, it seems like 20 feet up, because I've been up on those, and that seems really high.
It does seem quite high. And yeah, this is, you know, it's kind of like the updated, more elegant version of what we think of as like a stagecoach, for those who don't know anything about, the road coaches. But in, you know, in addition to the competition, there are so many other events that are fun for spectators. One of my favorite things personally is actually to go across the street and to see the horses in their stables and out being groomed, and coaches being cleaned and polished, and then you can really kind of get to see the behind the scenes, and that's free. That's right across the street, and that's really fun.
That's very cool. And I know this year too, you have some minis showing up, right? You not only do you have some drafts and some very large horses pulling the coaches, but you got minis.
Absolutely. And we usually do. We have the American Miniature Horse, and it's really fun to see them mightily pulling, you know, the small carts, and they have to go through the exact same classes as the big ones, which also include, for the cross country, a water element. And that's very cool to see them, you know, pushing or pulling, I should say, coaches right through water.
Did they issue them a snorkel?
Is that
part of the allowed?
I don't know. Yeah, the cross country is very fun to watch, because what it involves is a lot of what would have normally been seen at the time in the 1890s, and this is where they go over a prescribed course of natural and also artificial obstacles. It's a simulation of things that would have been encountered on a country drive. So there are covered bridges, there's water, there's a facade of an old building, there's kind of a carousel, and these are things that would have been needed to be negotiated outside of our oval, our Walnut Hill Oval, by all the drivers and their vehicles to see how they do in cross country, which is also, I think, a lot of fun to watch.
Now, do you have, there's also, and this is kind of cool, people don't realize that when they're really judging, especially the older carriages, or like in the picnic class where they bring out the really fancy carriages that everybody's all dressed up, but they have to put out a complete picnic too. And the judges actually come around and taste the food, and, you know, everything has to be accurate.
Absolutely. It has to be all matching. You know, what is called, and I had no idea about this before I started doing publicity for Walnut Hill, you know, the turnout is essentially not only judging the horses shown at different gates and what they need to do in terms of halt and back up and stand quietly, but it's also the condition and the fit and the appropriateness of the harness and the vehicle, the neatness and the appropriateness of the attire, the overall impression, you know, the manners of the whole package. And so, yeah, turnout is a pretty incredible thing to see. And we have a lot of folks who are also photographers who love to come and take photos here because it really is like nothing else.
This is in Pittsford, New York, and that's, tell everybody, where is that?
Okay, Pittsford is just southeast of the city of Rochester, and it's a suburb of Rochester. It's about maybe 12 minutes from downtown. So it's very simple to get here. It's beautiful. It's a country setting. It's like a country fair setting. Parking is free across the street. So, you know, you can spend a day, you can spend 2 days, you can spend all 5 days. There are a couple of very particular extra special events. Friday evening, we have what's called Ascot Picnic Night. And so folks can come and they can dress up or not. They can bring a picnic or not. If they do, they can choose to be judged on their picnic. And that's when we have some of the really fun, the costume classes, the carriage dog classes. Those are all on Friday night for Ascot Picnic Night, which is awesome. And then on Sunday morning, we have the presentation pleasure drive to Mendenhall Park, which is a beautiful park. And all of the carriages leave Walnut Hill and they go through the park. And it's about a 5 mile drive. And folks stand or sit and bring breakfast along the road and watch and take pictures. And that's just also very cool. So that's Sunday morning as well.
I know that Wendy and I love doing the parades just because it's, where else do you get to see 50 carriages together? You never get to see that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And all sorts, all kinds.
Okay. So one final question. My favorite class has always been the commercial equipment class.
Right.
Do you still have them? Commercial class?
Yes. Yep, we do. And we also have a ride and drive, which is cool. The drivers also have to show that maybe they can do some riding as well. So that's also quite a challenge. The last thing I wanted to say is we also have a special exhibition this year of something called All the King's Horses from Prospect Farm in Florida. And those are kind of dancing horses, and they'll be here Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for special presentations. So there's always something to see and buy and eat at Walnut Hill Farm Driving Competition.
Very good. You can find that at walnuthillfarm.org. All the details, if you're in that area, please do stop by. As I said, it's on a bucket list for me. Wendy and I are going to get up there one of these days.
We look forward to it.
We're going to make that happen. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck. Have fun, and we hope the weather holds.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Take care.
All right, take care. I really do like the commercial classes because they have all the old fire trucks and they have all the old ice cream trucks, or it might be an oil tanker pulled by carriage. It's all the old commercial vehicles and they're restored to perfection. It's so cool to watch.
Yeah.
If I had a carriage collection, it would be commercial vehicles. That's what I
really
would. Oh yeah. Cause it would just, they're so cool to look at. They're different.
Well,
so have you ever been in a carriage? I mean, a big carriage.
Well, there was that. I rode in a carriage the one time that I was on my way to my wedding and this giant pumpkin shows up and it's a converted pumpkin. And then I get in and then they take me all the way to the wedding. But then, you know, we had some drama with the guy I was going out with. And it wasn't a wedding. It was more like a dance. And at some point I realized I had to leave. And so I went running out of the dance. My shoe fell off. I jumped in the carriage. We ran home.
Okay. That took me a minute.
And then after I got home, the mice were like all over the place. I was just very confused by the whole.
And then Chad showed up at your door holding the slipper.
Does that answer your question about whether I've been in a carriage?
Smart ass. All right. Oh, my Daily Winnie is...
Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy, happy birthday to you.
My, Hi, Daily Winnie goes out to Patty Hanco, who works for Omega Alpha. We see her all the time. Happy birthday to Patty. And your turn.
My Daily Winnie goes out to all the listeners who have said that hearing Chili's Winnie makes their horses crazy. Because yesterday, well, a couple days ago, Chili, you know, bless his heart, he really doesn't need to work much more. So I took him over to where Baby Zara is so he could be Baby Zara's babysitter. And I brought Precious Magic Elf Jennings home. So because I'd ridden her enough over there to where I was comfortable not needing a round pen to get on. So I brought Magic home and I left Chili over there. Well, it's five houses down. And I promise you, you can hear Chili's Winnie from there. And so for the first day, he just screamed over to Duke and Joey. And anyway, so we were out yesterday and Chad's with me and the horses are turned out and we're trying to, you know, get the stalls cleaned up before I bring them all in. And he wanted to hear the interview with Monty. So he's listening just on with his phone in his pocket to the episode. And I guess at some point you played freaking Chili's Winnie.
Yeah.
And all the horses are standing at the gate, like waiting to come in. I'm like, back up. I'm clean. And then Chili's Winnie. Oh my God. All hell broke loose. Horses erupted. Joey screams and starts galloping. Duke, who already is a little sore, which we'll talk about later, he goes running. The Mustangs go crazy. Everybody starts galloping because they heard Chili's Winnie. And Chili's not here right now. So it's like, oh my God. I wonder if they thought he was dead and they were hearing his ghost Winnie. Because he's gone all of a sudden. He's not here anymore.
So I shouldn't do this.
Not if you want anybody that's riding their horse right now to stay on.
I apologize. And I post apologize. Sorry.
I feel like we should warn people. And I know we've heard that before, but it's real. It's a real thing. The horse is freaking out about Chili's Winnie.
You know,
and especially because he's not here anymore. And then it's like we played the Winnie and Chad goes, what happened? Why are they galloping? I go, Glenn playing Chili's Winnie.
I heard Chad also was listening to our show the other day and thought we were actually funny. So that was good. He wasn't mad.
Yes. I think there was two parts that he really preferred. And it was the me singing Whitney Houston in the background of you actually trying to do a real legitimate kind of advertisement. And I started singing in the back. And I really, you know, honestly, if you go back and listen to that, I actually didn't think anybody could hear me because the way the sound was working at Flag Is Up Farms, anytime you talked, I couldn't. If you started talking, it would cut me out. So you were talking and I just kept singing in the background. So really, honestly, I didn't know I was on the air when I was singing all that.
You were.
And I came clean about that ahead of time. And so then when he listened to it, it was doubly funny because if you go back and listen to it, you realize that I'm just singing. I didn't think anybody could hear me.
You didn't think anybody had any idea. Hey, you
well,
know,
Debbie was in there and I was kind of more entertaining Debbie with my beautiful voice. And then, I was on the air.
Well, I tell you what's going on this weekend is we're heading to Ada and one of our friends we're going to see at Ada is horselovers.com. Horse Lovers is going to be there because they're going to be buying all the new stuff that's coming to the market for the next 6 months. And basically the Ada show in August is to purchase for Christmas too. A lot of the Christmas stuff that people will be buying to put in the stores will be happening at this show this weekend. So I went over to Horse Lovers and I think they're trying to clean out before they go buy the new stuff because they have the seasonal closeouts up to 80% off. And I went on there. They got horsewear polo vests for $36. They have horsewear. They have other horsewear ladies vests for $27. It's just incredible the sales they have in here. A whole bunch of horsewear clothing, which I
assume their deal of the day is 80% off of collection.
That's crazy. I don't know how they make any money.
I found something for 87% off. Woohoo!
I think they're just trying to clean things out before they go buy new stuff is what's happening right now, because they'll be stocking up and then the new stuff will be coming in. They have to have a place to put it because you can't stock everything. So, I was just looking here. There must be 100 horsewear things. They have the Pessoa polo shirts that are so popular for $16, down from $55. Now, with their closeouts, they don't always have all the sizes, but you should definitely check. And I noticed that they had some of the fall and winter jackets and clothing that you're going to be needing soon. Yes, this 100 degrees will end at some point. But get it now.
Yeah.
Get it now because it really is at 80% off. That's what I'm trying to say. This stuff is marked down.
I would keep talking, but I'm shopping right now. Yeah, this is the worst.
I do catch Jennifer on there a few times, just a few. They also
horse chicks love a good deal. You know, I mean, there's nothing more exciting than getting a massively discounted item. Ooh, that half a zip.
Horse husbands love when horse chicks get a good deal on things they were normally going to buy.
Hey, we were normally going to buy it.
They also
it's all at once.
You can also enter to win. If you go there, they have an enter to win right now, a complete romp outfit. And all you have to do is put in your name, your email, and your zip code, and you submit your entry, and it's valued at $265. So you just need to go to horselovers.com every day because they have a different deal every day. So you need to go check it out. There's only 26 minutes left apparently on the horsewear closeout deal. So there'll be something else there in 30 minutes, but I guarantee.
And if you sign up too, they sign up to be a part of their mailing list. They will send you emails all like, hey, this weekend, free shipping. And then it's like you get an extra, I don't know, $12 to spend for free. It's like they're giving you money. It's like you're making money shopping on horselovers.com.
Well, let's make sure you head over there, horselovers.com. Hey, when you place your order, there's a little comment section. Say you heard about it on the Horse Radio Network.
Obviously, please.
Yeah,
please.
Always put that in the comments. It definitely helps us out. And we're looking forward to seeing them all there this weekend at Ada. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we head back to talking about the Mongol Derby a little bit? We all know about Leslie Wiley, who is one of us here at the Horse Radio Network. And, you know, we've been doing her updates and we've had many guests on, but we haven't talked about all the different fascinating people that are in this race. And I was doing some research this morning. What I thought we would do, if it's okay with you, is I took a look at the top 10 that came into checkpoint 3, which is where everybody's now done for the day. Leslie was number one. She came in an hour before everybody else. Now, keep in mind that these checkpoints, Jamie, it's just like an endurance race. Their horses have to pass a vet check, which means the respiration has to come down. And they have to wait to leave until the respiration and the vet check on the horse they're carrying.
Yeah.
So that takes, a half an hour sometimes. So it isn't that she's killing her horses because they wouldn't pass the vet. She still has to do that too. Now, we don't know if her horse in the second leg was just bolting the entire time.
I'm sure it was, but everybody's horse was. So, you know, you kind of keep up with the Joneses. Yes. The time in Mongolia right now is 9:35 p.m.
So they're exactly 12 hours from Eastern time here in the United States. So because it's 9:36 here, which makes it easy for us. You have to calculate 15 hours. So
I do that.
All right. So Mongol Derby top 10. You want to hear a little bit about some of the other competitors? In number two was... Let's take a look here.
Marie Palser,
who's from New Zealand. She's 22 years old. She entered the Mongol Derby as she is completely addicted to adventure and pushing herself to the limits. She taught herself to ride when she was really young, and she classifies as a long-distance rider. She spent 102 days traveling solo on horseback in New Zealand.
Wow.
So she's a little bit of a badass, too.
Okay. Yeah, she's a badass. But then let's look at number three, Ed Fernan from Australia. Yes. He was in the 2012 Olympics in pentathlon.
Yes.
I mean, he's a pentathlete.
Yes.
An Olympic pentathlete. Dang. He climbed at the highest peak in the Southern Hemisphere, and he rode 1,000 kilometers from Braidwood to Melbourne over, oh my gosh, over the Snowy River country. I don't know. I made that up. It says Snowy Mountains. That but is, I figure I it's Snowy River it country.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. He's so cool.
Yeah. He's 29 years old, Australian. Then we had Brooke Wharton. I don't know anything about her. She was not on the official list that was sent out. So I don't know
really?
If she was a substitute or she just joined the race by herself on her horse. I don't know. But anyway, she's in, we're trying to find out more about her. She's in fourth place. James Lester sitting in number five.
Oh God, he's hot. He must be hot. He's 21 and he's a professional polo player.
From Australia.
From Australia.
Yeah.
And, he's hot.
When he grows up, he aspires to become a seahorse trainer.
He's Australian, which means he's very sarcastic.
Yes. Yes, I think that's
probably, and probably
maybe
pretty
they
funny.
They have seahorses down there we don't know about, and they're holding out. Six is Rebecca Pumphrey. Now, she's 30 years old from the UK. She is known as Pixie. She works in London as a talent agency. She looks for actors. She basically tries to find actors' jobs, and she rides whenever she can. She's ridden forever, mostly Arabs, and that's her breed of choice, so I imagine she does a little bit of endurance riding. So she's from the city.
Next is Lucy Taylor, and I wonder, did she come with the other hot polo player guy? James Lester, because she's also 21 and he's a polo player. She's a polo groom.
Yeah,
so maybe they're together from Australia.
Yeah.
She grew up on cattle property in Northwestern NSW. Is that just, what does that mean?
That's the province. That means North, South, South
New Wales. South Wales.
North South Wales, I think.
New South Wales.
New South Wales. Thank you.
Sorry. Was on the back of the horse at a very early age and is doing the Derby because she thinks it will be an incredible adventure as well as an invaluable learning experience.
It'll be all of
that's
those.
Like a really, really polite 21-year-old where the other guy's like, I'm going to train seahorses. She's like, I think it'll be an incredible experience.
Then we had Sally Toy. Now, Sally Toy is out of the UK. Also, she's 54 years old. And she said she's always loved to travel, adventure, and endurance. She completed the Tevis four times in the last 20 years. And by the way, if you didn't hear yesterday's show, you need to go listen to yesterday's Horses in the Morning. It was the endurance episode. We had the Tevis winner on. We had the Hagen Cup winner on. We had a lady who was 75 years old, rode it 49 years ago for the first time, and just completed it again yesterday. At 75 years old, toughest endurance race in the world, and she's there completing it at 75. So Sally Toy is also an endurance rider, and I think that we'll be seeing her in the front the whole time.
That's cool. The next one is Jackie Mellett, and I did when I heard about Jackie, I figured that it was, you know, when you go on to horsenation.com, you can vote for who you thought was going to win. And of course, I feel like Leslie Wiley is going to win, but my second vote for the person coming in second was Jackie, because Jackie Mellett from South Africa is a potato farmer. No, grew up in Johannesburg, but loved being on the farm and got to work and be outside. So he moved to the potato farm and he's doing the Derby to prove to his kids that their dad is no sissy boy. I ain't no sissy boy. I'm going to prove it. I'm going to ride in Mongolia.
That's crazy. Right. Darn it. All right. And then number 10 coming in the list was Warren Sutton. Now, Warren Sutton is out of Australia. Boy, the Australians are just leading the pack here, aren't they? He's 45 years old. He plays around in the film industry and has many big adventures, and we don't know much more about Warren. He didn't offer a whole lot in his bio. So that's what we know about Warren Sutton. So that's where we're sitting with, what, four or five Australians in the top 10 coming into Checkpoint 3 at this point.
But U.S. in the lead, baby.
Yeah, that's right. U.S. in the lead. Oh, Leslie out there to win. Now, whoever PG is, Pierre Oh, Pierre Germain from the United States is 21 years old. He was born in Paris and moved to the U.S. at the age of 8. He started riding at 3 years old. When he was 19, he worked for a summer as a wrangler at a dude ranch. And his family bought a farm this summer where he works and rides every day. And into checkpoint one, he came in bleeding. So there's a picture. There's a picture on the Mongol Derby Twitter feed of them trying to repair his face. I don't know what happened, but apparently they said he had a pause there for a minor stitch up, and he's back in the saddle and pushing on.
So. Okay, let me just point out to horse people where you're like, yeah, I ride horses. I ride every summer at camp. What? And now you're in Mongolia doing the Derby? What? I ride horses. I ride every summer at camp. Hello. Now, of course I ride. I'm like an expert.
The real test tomorrow is going to be who survives the food today. So it'll be, from what Devin said, it'll be the second and third day when the food poisoning starts to kick in. So
now, did I hear Leslie Wiley is at a mall where there's a Pizza Hut?
I didn't see the sign in the overhead on the tracker.
I need to check this out. What was it? Golden Meadows. Golden Meadows.
One of the stores is Goats R Us.
No, it is not.
And then the other store is, let me look, it's the Mare's Milk, Fermented Mare's Milk Dairy Barn. Look at that. She's going to be feasting tonight.
Sounds delicious.
Did you gross out when you heard Devin talking about the food last night? You must have been just like freaking
out. I was only able to hear the first half of your thing, so I still have to go listen to the end of it.
Yeah, you wait till you hear her talking about the food. You could just be thankful you didn't go on this. I did ask her, I said, did you see any vegetables, these gurs and yurts you were staying at? And she said, no, there's no vegetables. So, in case you missed it last night, this is what Leslie and the rest of them will be eating every night with the locals. They will have fermented mare's milk. Apparently, they drink a lot of that, and it's a special thing there. So, when company comes, they get it out. I said, are they drunk all the time? Because it's alcohol. So, and then they drink this tea stuff. She said the tea stuff wasn't too bad if you closed your eyes. So, I don't know what that means. But the tea stuff and the fermented mare's milk is apparently what you drink a lot of. And then she said, pretty much, you'll have rice. And on top of the rice, they will cook goat. And they'll put the goat on top of the rice. And I said, is there seasoning? She said, yep, there is salt. So you're going to have salty goat on rice every day, pretty much.
I would be eating rice with salt on it. Yummy.
And she did say, I said, what do you do for breakfast? You know, she said they make these, and it started, if you remember back to the Civil War days, they had something that was called hardtack, which was basically crackers. You know, it was bread that was dried up. And she said they make these hard cookie-like things that you dip in the tea, and then you can eat them. And it sounded like hardtack to me. So that's going to be breakfast.
That didn't sound so bad. Nothing like a little bit of chopped up dead goat on rice to really get your sleep well.
You need your protein. I did ask also, I asked Devin last night when we did the live feed, I said, at what point in the race do you really start to feel it? And you're going, I don't know if I can continue. She said, it happens to everybody. And it's usually the third or fourth day. When you've been in the saddle, it's rained on you once or twice, the chafing has started, and, you know, the pain has set in. And she said it's usually the third or fourth day when you're going, really, should I be continuing to do this? So it's all going to come out in the wash here over the next couple of days. This is what we're going to do for your coverage, and then we'll take a break for a song and change gears a little bit. We are going to be trying to do coverage like tomorrow morning. Devin's going to be joining us first thing on Mary Kitzmiller's training episode. She'll be here at 9 o'clock like Tommy was, and she'll be giving us an update. Devin is also going to keep us informed. All the alumni of the Mongol Derby have their own private Facebook page, and they have a betting pool going. So we're going to be kept up to date on the private betting pool. Yes, it does sound like Hunger Games. Exactly, like Hunger Games. So
yeah,
we're going to have that betting pool. We'll let you know about that. And then Devin and I are going to try and do these every night these videos, or one of us will do it, or somebody's going to be doing the videos. Maybe Jamie can join us, or Wendy, or whatever. And we're just going to be doing an update every night on the Facebook Lives over on the Horses in the Morning page. And then even over the weekends, we're going to try and put out special episodes onto your feed, even if they're short, with just updates. So we'll be doing what we can from Ada and over the weekend to still provide you coverage onto the feeds. So that's what's happening there.
Cool.
We might be doing it from an airport. We might be doing it from a hotel. We're going to be doing it from someplace. So,
God, we'll get you your Leslie Wiley update.
That's right.
I don't do Twitter, so I don't really understand Twitter. And so I'm glad I have you to ask my questions of.
Well, and Twitter, I will say, they don't update, the Mungo Derby doesn't update their Facebook page really well. So Twitter, obviously following the tracker, which we have posted on our Horses in the Morning page. It's pinned to the top, all the places you can follow the race. But if you just search Mongol Derby 2017 tracker on Google, you'll find it as well. But the tracker, obviously, to get who's where, but their Twitter page is where they post all the good stuff. They did have a overhead drone footage of the beginning of the race where they all headed out, and they were out at a dead run. It started at a dead run across the plains. So
wow,
that video was pretty cool. So Jamie, you can even watch it. If you go to Twitter, go search Twitter Mongol Derby Live, it'll bring up their feed and you can scroll.
Cool.
Even you will understand.
Okay. Get a Twitter Simplify.
That's right. Twitter Simplified. I thought, seeing we're talking all this Mongol Derby stuff, how about a little Templeton Thompson when I get where I'm going? Because that's all.
Love it.
That's what they hope for today. And we'll be back. We have Carolyn coming up from Heels Down. And we're also going to be chapter two, right, of the book?
That's right. Chapter two of the Opium Equation.
Yay. All right. Here we go.
By Lisa Wysocki.
I don't know where, but I'll get there. they're gonna grow real tall. I won't worry about nothing at all when I get where I'm going. When I get where I'm going. When I get where I'm going. Where I'm going.
Where I'm
going. Mm, yeah.
Templeton Thompson, and when I get where I'm going.
And she only has about 775 kilometers left before she gets where she's going.
There you go. There you
good,
go.
Good song choice, though. That was perfect.
I was going, what can I play today that makes sense when I get where I'm going? So I'm going to try and find some more as we do our coverage here. So
Tempe was a little like soft and relaxed, though. Like hers is more like, where am I going? Gallop! Need something more up-tempo.
That's true. I want to hear about, you posted a picture or a little video. Apparently you had a scuffle at the farm.
Oh my gosh, poor old guy. Duke is a horse that I bought years ago from a listener, sight unseen, on video. What could possibly go wrong? Nothing went wrong. He's amazing and perfect. And it's a big, giant, like 16 two-hand buckskin. We had no idea of his breeding. And we did a DNA test. And turns out he's, what's a Cleveland Bay warm blood cross.
Which is a nice cross. That's a nice cross. Yeah.
It's fantastic. So, and he's got like Cleveland Bay warm blood quarter horse was his DNA testing because we had no idea what he was because bless her heart, Betty Faye bought him from a horse trader and they gave her papers, but the papers said that he was Palomino and he's buckskin. And then she said, this paper says that he's Palomino. And he's like, oh yeah, he switched. What? He switched from a Palomino to a, but he just grew into a buckskin. Like, I'm like, it doesn't work like that. So the paper said that he was in a quarter horse thoroughbred cross.
Did you buy him on Craigslist?
I think she did. I got him from Betty. So whatever she did,
Betty,
and she's an auditor.
Buy that horse off Craigslist.
It's pretty much a horse dealer, and he ended up being her like second level dressage horse and her husband's trail horse, and he's fantastic. And so I kind of bought him off video. She sent me some videos of her riding him. I'm like, sold, perfect, great, bring him down. And he's been awesome. We've had him for gosh four years now, at least, I think. So he's obviously part of the family. And, you know, when you've known a horse this long, you just see something and you're like, that's weird. That's weird. Because Duke doesn't really like the heat and he doesn't like the sun. So he's kind of the one who will stand under the tree or in the shade. And I was driving out the other day to run to a client's house. And I just looked over and I saw Duke standing in the middle of the pasture, four feet, just standing there post-legged in the middle of the pasture. I thought, that's weird. But I was driving out the driveway. I come back an hour later. He's still standing in the exact same spot, which is even weirder. He hasn't moved. So I'm like, I'm going to bring him in. I don't know why he's just standing in the sun. It's like 104 degrees. So I get into the back and they can come all the way to the barn from the paddocks, pastures. And I'm like, Duke, come on, bud. Let's go. Time to eat. You know, shake a bucket. He always is. If I go to the back, he's at the barn. I'm like, oh, I'm starving. He's not there. So what the heck? So I grab a halter and I go out to get him. Because at this point, I know something's wrong. And he wouldn't move. And I'm like, what? And I look over his butt. He's bloody across his rump. He's got scratches. The inside hind leg, like the thigh area, looks like it has a big wound on it, like he's been kicked. And he won't walk. And so I called the vet, of course, because, oh my gosh, his leg is broken. But just at this point, as I'm, come on, buddy, because I can't leave him in the pasture anyway. We're standing in the sun. Let's at least get you into the back where the vet can drive in. And so I'm trying to walk him, and he finally starts walking. And he's weight-bearing, but he's really lame. And as I'm walking through the stalls, because there's one stall that they can go into for shade and water, And there it looks like a scuffle has taken place. And it's just him and Joey out there. And he and Joey have been turned out together for years. But Chili's always been there. So I ended up switching them to the smaller pasture because now I've gone from 3 to 2. And I put the Mustangs in the big pasture. Well, this losing one horse and switching it to a different pasture was enough to make them have like a new battle for who's in charge. And battle it was, because I found horse hair, his mane in pieces of his mane, all in the stall. The rubber mats were all messed up. The water was dumped over. It was like a disaster area in the stall. So they must have had a fight. Duke lost. And now he's super lame. So I did video him, and I sent it to the vet, and she just said, cold hose and butte, you know, that's all we're going to be able to do, is it's not broken. So cold hose and butte, as cold hose as much as you can when the water's lukewarm. So I hosed him and put him in front of a fan. He seemed better yesterday, but not 100%. So I think he's going to have a couple days of just being sore, but I was so scared that he was going to lay down, because what happens when horses, they can have a fracture in their leg, because horse chicks just think the worst. I'm like, oh my God, he's got a fracture.
Yeah, they're always going to die immediately.
It's going to kill him. He's going to die. Like, I got to say bye to Duke right now. That's what we think. We're like, oh my God, he's going to die. So the worst part is that I've seen horses, because I was a vet tech, that maybe kicked the wall or something or got kicked. And there's a little hairline fracture, but it's not enough to make them completely crippled lame. But what happens is they lay down and they go to sleep, and then they try to get back up and the thing breaks. So keep in mind, I just know that Duke has a hairline fracture and he's sleeping in his stall and he's probably dead. I must have got up 6 times that night, trying to go see him and make sure he's not like flailing around in a stall with a broken leg. This is what girls do. Please tell me I'm not the only one that just can't sleep because she thinks her horse is hurt. Oh my gosh. Chad's like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, I gotta go check on Duke again. It's like, really? It's like 2 a.m. I'm like, he could be sleeping. And then he tried to stand up and then his leg broke because he got kicked with Joey.
Let's find out. We have Jennifer on here, but we also have Caroline just joined us from Heels Down Magazine. You've never done that, have you, Caroline?
Jamie, you are so not not alone. It's not even funny. Like, I'm just like biting my tongue, trying not to like burst in and be like, oh my God, I can totally relate.
So I'm not the only one who visualizes their horse in the stall with a broken leg flailing and in pain going, oh my gosh, they need me.
So I just got done this past weekend driving, making a 10-hour drive from North Carolina to New Jersey, and I was hauling a horse. And because I just moved up to New Jersey, and just as soon as I got back from Aachen, it's been craziness, and I've spent like 48 hours in, you know, various different places. But when I was hauling this horse up, it's not my horse. It belongs to a very good friend of mine, and they just sent it to me to ride it and compete it. And so I'm like, well, this is, you know, when it's my horse, it's one thing, but when it's somebody else's horse, like, that's a huge responsibility and you just want to make sure that they're okay. And so every time I felt this horse shift in the trailer, or I thought that maybe I braked a little faster than he would like, or like, I'm like, well, maybe his hay nut got spun around and he can't reach it. Like, I think I stopped to check on him like a ridiculous amount of time. It's just because I don't have a camera back there, and I just wanted to like lay eyes on him. And I kept stopping to check on him, and he would literally look at me every time I opened the door, like, what the hell do you want, lady? Like,
let's keep driving.
Let's get there. What is the matter with you? And he was totally fine. But I kept imagining. I was like, oh my God, like, that stoplight was the one that broke his leg. Like, oh my God, like, he's definitely colicking back there. What is wrong with
y'all
us?
Y'all are neurotic, actually, to be honest.
Jennifer, does this happen to you? Because you're pretty much, you're more stoic than most, in a very healthy way. Does this happen to you too?
Oh, I just keep it to myself. Oh my gosh, I have ulcers over, you know. Oh my gosh, he's got a bug bite on his face. okay, he's going to die.
Okay, you all heard the story about her $230 fancy new expensive shoes she had put on her horse. She that night had nightmares. She woke up with nightmares that he'd ripped the shoe off. So there you go.
Okay, good. The husband always tells the way it is.
Yeah, that's me.
Now, us husbands, all we think about is, oh, God, this is going to cost a fortune. That's what comes to our mind.
I think that's exactly what Chad thought, too. And like, I'm like, because I made him jog Duke and walk Duke for the video. And he must have just been like, oh, God. So they do think, how much is this going to cost me?
I'm sorry. We care about you and love your animals. We really do. But the first thing that comes to mind is, oh, that's a $12,000 vet bill.
My husband, when I can't sleep because I'm worried about Duke having slipped and broken his leg because he had a hairline fracture and now it's broken because he tried to stand up and I have to get up at 2 a.m. and make sure he's not suffering out there. My husband just goes, God, it must be hard being you.
You're like, yes, it is. It's really miserable in here.
It's really hard in here. And I'm glad that you appreciate how difficult of a struggle my daily life is.
Also, there is a syndrome, I think, when you've been a vet tech during your life and like you've seen so many weird injuries come in, because I was also a vet tech and my level of paranoia went up exponentially after taking care of other people's animals. And like the weird horses try to die in the most creative, expensive way. It's ridiculous. Exactly right.
It's like they wake up in the morning and they have a little chat. Like, okay, guys, how are we going to try to kill ourselves today?
Mary brought a horse. Did you see that post? Mary Kitzmiller, Beyond Tomorrow, brought one of her training horses because it had a little tiny cut in the back of its leg. Brought it in the vet, and all of a sudden it was like, okay, well, this horse may have to be put down.
She's it's a tiny little cut. It's just a tiny little cut. You're going to die. Oh, my God, we're going to die.
That's it. That's the final nail in the coffin. Yep.
This is it. I'm going to have to say goodbye. So last night I was on the floor, you know, snuggling with Lucky and Chad, you know, and Lucky's the basset hound that I rescued from the pound, and he's like 100. And instead of snuggling on the couch with my husband, because we've put the kid to bed, I come back in. I'm like, oh, hi, baby. And then I lay down with Lucky on the floor and we're snuggling. And he just looks, he's like, you're ridiculous. And I go, you know what? I don't want him to die and to me to think that I didn't love him enough. He's like, what is wrong with you?
Hey, Jennifer, can you give a call to find out who the best shrink is in Phoenix?
Yeah, can we get a doctor on this show? Yeah,
it's part of your perk for being a host is you get to go to the shrink for free.
I don't want him to regret that I didn't love him enough. Okay.
My God.
All right, Carolyn, let's start your segment here. She's starting to scare me a little.
Gosh, I'm listening to myself, realizing that I do need therapy. Thank you.
You are neurotic. It comes down to the neurotic, I think. All right.
Sometimes they say things, and I'm like, did I just say that?
Of course, she has been working with me every day for 6 years, so that might be a partial cause. Heels Down Magazine is where Carolyn is from, and also the brand new fun podcast, Heels Down Happy Hour, which just had an episode come out last night, right?
Yes, episode 4 already, which kind of seems nuts. Like, I feel like we just started, we did just start the podcast. It's only episode 4. I mean, come on. But it feels like just yesterday we were just like, we should do a podcast. And like now we're already kind of cruising through it. So yes, you can check that out. It is out and it's awesome. I think this was my favorite episode so far, actually. So everyone should listen.
And I know, Jamie, I'll let you go here. Jamie's pulling up the articles now to chat about them. But before we go on, you did talk about Jaunty, who we've had on the show here, about his fundraising campaign to buy his event horse. He needed 500,000 pounds, Jaunty Evans. And it was his Rio horse and the owner needed to sell it. And he's been doing a fundraiser that is the most incredible fundraiser we've seen in the horse world, to be honest. And he reached his goal yesterday at 500,000 pounds.
He now is going to own the horse. That is really amazing. I didn't know if I was convinced that it was going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, you really want
none of us were convinced it was going to happen.
To happen for somebody. And I was like, well, you know, like, stranger things have happened.
Show,
but
he was at 150. And I did say to him, I said, this is a lot of money. You got 350,000 pounds.
Yeah. Now, that's a lot.
He did have two large contributions, one for 150 and one for 100. So without those, he even said, without those big donors, we would not have done it. But he had so. But that means, if you take a look, that's half the money, 250,000 pounds. That means 250,000 pounds came in smaller chunks.
Yeah. Well, and looking at our listeners talking about it, some of them donated not once but twice. Because they just trying to get them there. The listeners that we have are amazing, but that's just a small piece of the people that donated $350,000 or whatever to help him help a stranger that loves his horse keep his horse. And that's an astronomical figure that you would think 500,000 pounds. God, the first time I read that, I kind of laughed. It's like,
yeah,
that's crazy talk. That's never going to happen. And here it is. I mean, that's amazing. But it's why you crowdfund.
It's like one of those things, too, that I feel it's so easy with, you know, everything that's on the news to get really like bogged down in misery and like lose your faith in humanity. And when, you know, you're part of the horse community and things like this happen where people really band together for somebody. It's like we're so lucky to be like surrounded by awesome people. There are a lot of really, really good people out there. So I'm so thrilled for him. That's really exciting.
We've heard
it's awesome. He's been doing media, like real, he's been doing real radio and TV, Glenn.
Yeah, exactly.
All morning.
We talk about a lot of racehorses through the years that have been referred to as the people's horse. They ain't got nothing on Jaunty's horse. That's the people's horse right there because the people own this horse. You know, it is really cool.
Yeah, even the BBC has covered it. So it's pretty amazing. Pretty awesome. I'm really excited for him. So congratulations to Jaunty and Cooley Rourke's Drift.
I like that. What's pronunciation.
How's it supposed to be pronounced?
Cooley Rourke's Drift. Yeah, that is an interesting name. I like it.
I was just, while I was saying that, I'm like, I got to know his barn name. How do we not know that? Right? Does anybody know his barn name? Art.
It's Art.
Art.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Congrats, Art.
Yay.
That's way better.
It's really good news.
All right. Let's actually talk about something Carolyn came on to talk about.
Yes. Let's talk about your article about Soledad O'Brien. Oh, she's a horse chick?
Yeah. Isn't that so cool? She's like this, you know, very, of course, like famous person. Everybody's seen her on TV. But what they don't know as you know, what you don't think about her doing is riding horses. And she spends actually a lot of time at the barn and her children ride. And she says that it's where, you know, the barn is where she goes to kind of get away from
find humanity.
Get away. Yeah, exactly. Get away from the stresses of, you know, living in New York City and having a very high profile career. She, if you're not familiar with Soledad, she, of course, is an American television news journalist. She has worked as a news anchor and also a correspondent on channels like MSNBC, Al Jazeera America, CNN, HBO. She's a big deal is basically what I'm trying to say. She's kind of a big deal.
She makes a few dollars more than the three of us.
Oh, do you think? Maybe. So she lives in New York City and goes to a barn in upstate New York. She said it's just a private farm that she, you know, it's quiet and she keeps her horse Aspen there. And she just rides recreationally. And you have to read the article if you haven't, because the things that she says are so relatable for adult amateurs that are trying to balance their family and their career, you know, and children. She has, you know, four kids and she lives in the city. And it's the one thing that she says that she does for herself and that she finds that really important. And then one of the funniest things to me about that article is she talks about how she actually met this woman at a barn one time and watched her ride a horse. And then, you know, chatted with her, had a bit of a conversation, and then offered her a job because she said that she had all of the qualities that she would want an employee that she was demonstrating on this horse. So it's also one of those things that you never know who's watching, and you should, you know, always like be kind and know that people can, you know, are seeing you ride your horse, and maybe you're going to get a job offer from Soledad O'Brien out of it. So I thought that was pretty cool too.
That's amazing. And so what I really liked is she talks about how, you know, she has money. Yeah. You know what? She's worked hard for her money. So what she did do when she was 13, when she started riding, is she mucked stalls for lessons. Ugh. I mean,
everyone has like can relate to that, you know, like that's, how many of us?
No,
have done
not
that?
Everybody can. We can.
Well, okay.
Not everybody can.
Okay,
and
we
that's
can.
What's so amazing about it is that she went for it, and then she also bought a off the track thoroughbred when she was older, and ended up she hurt herself doing something else, and then ended up having a big old. I think she got a warm blood now, right?
Yeah, and she, you know, she kind of had a wake up call that, you know, talking to so many adult amateurs with my work, you know, I know so many people have had this sort of experience where she kind of had this moment of realizing that she doesn't want the thrill of a challenging horse anymore. And she just was like, I want a calm horse that I can just get on and have fun. And I'm not in this for like, you know, thrills and spills anymore. Like a lot of kids are, you know, you sort of, as you get older, you know, you kind of lose a little bit of that recklessness. So everyone should check out that article. She's so down to earth and so relatable. And yeah, who knew that Soledad O'Brien was like this major horse enthusiast? It's really awesome.
I had no idea. Put her on our list of interviews, Glenn.
Oh, we gotta get Denise, her for Radiothon.
Gotta get her.
Yeah.
We can interview her. Now, Carolyn, you wrote the next one. And look, did I need this morning?
Oh no. I'm sorry. Did I raise your paranoia level?
My paranoia level is sky high right now. And then you bring me this article that you wrote called Toxic Feed, Lethal Consequences.
I'm
Go
so
ahead.
Sorry. This is, That's okay. You shouldn't have been exposed to this. I shouldn't have sent it to you.
From positive drug tests to death, horse owners fear the aftermath of equine feed contamination. You know what? You guys are starving to death. You get nothing. You can't find it. You can't eat it. No more feeding horses. I'm done.
And as the horse husband, we see that and go, ooh, that's cheaper. I love that idea.
Carrots only. That's we know right. that those aren't contaminated.
Organic carrots. Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Only organic.
Only wild carrots found in your pasture.
Homegrown. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So this was a really fun article to write because I'm, you know, kind of like a science nerd and I love anything regarding veterinary medicine. And so I got to chat with Joe Pagan, who is a PhD and the founder and president of Kentucky Equine Research. They, of course, are the feed advisors for, I think, the past 6 Olympic Games. So they know their stuff a little bit. And so this came up, it's been in the news the past several years, and actually my sister, I have a kind of personal connection to this. My sister is an equine veterinarian, and she actually was one of the responding veterinarians to a Mennonsen poisoning case in South Carolina. And when it was going on, you know, I was on the phone with her every day. This was a couple of years ago. And she was, you know, having to wear like the crazy like hazmat suits, you know, and everything and the booties and worried about getting her, you know, her own horses contaminated because they weren't exactly sure what it was when all of these horses started getting sick. So it can be a really, really scary, earth-shattering kind of experience for barns to go through, especially before you realize what's making your horse sick. But when you have, you know, several horses in the barn start to show the same symptoms, I mean, that's, Jamie, cover your ears. Just this isn't good for you to hear.
Well, you know what? I'm familiar with the Menenson because they did an episode about it on Heartland. Okay. So in Heartland, there was the chicken feed that the horses were getting into because they were feeding the chickens out in the, just throwing it out, and the horses were eating it and they all got sick. But unlike real life, all the horses survived the Menenson poisoning. It is pretty much like wait till they die, right?
Menenson poisoning it typically results in death for horses, as I understand it.
It's unless not your Heartland recovery. And all the horses lived. And I was like, this is crap. I want Heartland rules.
So horses are extremely susceptible to Menenson toxicity. They're 20 times more sensitive than cattle. But the thing about buying feed, long story short, feed has ended up accidentally being in horse feed, even in low quantities, several times over the past several years. And so this has really brought up, it's made people really worry about where they're buying their feed from. But the question is not a matter of necessarily if you're buying your feed, if you're buying your feed from a mill that also does cattle feed or chicken feed, because that's where Menenson is used. It's whether or not those mills actually use Menenson in their feed. So just because they're making cattle feed does not mean that you're increasing your risk for getting horse feed that's contaminated by Menenson. So you have to ask whether or not they actually use Menenson in their mill. And you can call your feed mills and or wherever you get your feed from and actually ask, do you use Menenson and what kind of safeguards do you have against making sure that it doesn't end up in horse feed?
Well, that sounds great, but I use Nutrina. So how do I call my local feed mill with Purina or Nutrina when you can't? How do I know where the bag came from?
No, you can call those companies and they will tell you, where they're manufactured, they're different manufacturing lots and everything like that. But you can call them and they can tell you exactly what other feeds are manufactured. And then there are some, feed companies that they only do equine feed. And so then you don't have to worry about it at all. But again, Menenson is very commonly used in other livestock feed, and it's everyone that's manufacturing horse feed knows that horses are not supposed to receive Menenson. So it's not like a lack of education in the feed production industry. It's these things have happened completely accidentally. And unfortunately, horses are just so susceptible to it that even a very small exposure can make them very, very sick or kill them. There's no reason for crazy paranoia, but it is, it's the responsibility of the feed manufacturing companies to know exactly what's going into their feed and what possible cross contaminations can occur. So you can always call and ask. I'm very sorry to all of the Carolyn, feed manufacturers that Jamie is about to call.
Your stories from now on, and I have to determine which ones Jamie's allowed to listen to.
Exactly. Oh my gosh.
Carolyn, there's a reason that every time Dr. Chang comes on the air on Mondays, it costs me money. Because I'm like, oh my god, I have to treat that. I think I have a horse with a cough. I need to lung flush, and I need this. It's the same thing. Oh my god. Same thing. So anyway, Carolyn, we have run out of time, but where can everybody go to see this unbelievably beautiful magazine?
So you can download Heels Down magazine on your iPhone or on your Android. You can go to iTunes or Google Play to download the issue or to subscribe to the magazine. Your first month is free. So if you want to check out this month with Soledad O'Brien on the cover, that issue will be free to you if you're a new subscriber for the magazine. And then you can also check our newly designed website out at heelsdownmag.com.
Yeah, it's really, really great. The articles are really well written and not hard to understand. Sometimes people get so excited about using big words that they don't string them together very well. So it's easy reading. It's put in an order where it's enjoyable, and the pictures are amazing. You guys just do such a great job.
Thanks, Jamie. We love it.
And they do a good job on their podcast, too, here in the Horse Radio Network. Go to your mm-hmm. app and just search for Heels Down Happy Hour. If you haven't tried it yet, you should give it a try, and I think you're going to like it. You know what? We had a couple people that told me they didn't like episode one, and then by episode three, they wrote and apologized and said, I really like this show now. So apparently, Caroline, people have to get used to you.
We're converting people. Yeah, I guess I'm an acquired taste. That's right. I don't know.
We'll see you, Caroline.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
I'm an acquired taste.
Hey, before we get to our book reading for chapter two of The Opium Equation, there's just somebody we have to acknowledge today. He passed away. We didn't get a chance to do it earlier.
I know every crack in these dirty sidewalks of Broadway.
Did you hear that yesterday?
Where hustle's the name of the game. And
yeah, Glenn Campbell died yesterday at 81 years old.
Are you named after him?
No, I am not, actually. I don't know, but Glenn was a popular name back when I was born. Then it became unpopular. Names are weird. They get popular, they become unpopular, and then they get popular again about 30 years
later.
My
brother's name is Joshua Glenn Massey. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a family name in my family.
Yeah, I don't know how they came up with Glenn. I wish I'd asked that question, actually.
Well, see, that would have been a good story. You should have said, my namesake passed away. I was named after Glenn.
Yeah,
I forget. Just own it.
Rule. I keep forgetting that. Yeah, 81 years old, he had Alzheimer's and was sick for a long time. So we wish him and his family the best. Well, that's it for today. We're going to have, coming up right now, chapter two of the book reading of The Opium Equation. I wanted to remind everybody that Mary Kitzmiller is back tomorrow. She'll be answering listener questions on training and have guests. We're going to have Devin on at the beginning of the show to talk about the Mongol Derby, get our update there. If you get a chance tonight, hang out at Horses in the Morning Facebook page. We'll post what time we're going to be on, usually around 8 or 9 o'clock for our Facebook Live. Maybe Jamie, you're going to join us if you can some of these nights too. So
sure will. No problem.
It is I'd video, so you're going to have to get dressed. Just saying.
I've just gotten out of the pool. I'll right. be all like yeah. in a bathing
maybe
suit.
Maybe put some pants on Lucas, who's running around naked in the back. But yeah, so we'll be doing that. But now we're in chapter two of this book. Is that correct?
Now, if you have missed chapter one, go just buy the book or go back and listen to last Wednesday, because I'm telling you, I've read it and you're going to want to follow along. Might as well have me do the reading for you.
You're doing a great job with the reading, too. Really well done.
Yeah.
Last Wednesday started like 10 minutes before the end of the show. We're going to wrap here and let the book take us out. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning. The Opium Equation is the first of the Cat Enright mystery series written by Lisa Wysocki. It features Cat Enright, a Tennessee Appaloosa horse trainer, Darcy Whitcomb, teenager with a trust fund, Bubba Henley, a budding juvenile delinquent, and John Gardner, a mysterious barn manager. And of course, there's Sally Blue. Thank you to the publisher Cool Titles for allowing us to read this book. If you want to read ahead, all four books in the series are available in stores and online everywhere or at lisawysocki.com.
After leaving Bubba, I headed east on River Road and zoomed into town at the blazing speed of 30 miles per hour. Well, it was icy. I'd woken this morning to the familiar rattle of my bedroom window just before the sleet came, and sure enough, a few hard pings soon fell on the glass. Ice and sleet were not unusual in February in Nashville, but then again, sunny and 70 wasn't unusual either. I wanted to load up on supplies in case the sleet turned into a major ice storm. Worst case scenario was that my farm was right on the Cumberland River and we could haul water up for the horses, but the nearest store was miles away and we would be iced in. My supply of hot chocolate was running low and I sometimes got cranky if I missed my daily dose. Trust me, no one wanted that to happen. If a big storm didn't develop, I didn't mind a little bad weather driving. Traveling the Appaloosa horse show circuit, I had hauled my 6-horse rig through all kinds of weather. Most Nashvillians I'd found didn't like to drive when the weather was cooler than 33 degrees, but somehow they could strip grocery shelves bare at the slightest hint of snow. I hope this early in the morning I'd catch all those hypocrites who claim never to have left their homes, yet were sure to leave the stores with empty shelves by noon. Normally, the drive into town was pretty, especially in the spring when just past the Henley House and continuing half a mile or so, there were scattered fields of wildflowers. But today, ice, sleet, and fog kept any of the fields from being visible. I ate a hearty breakfast at Vernon May's, a local mom and pop that featured the mouthwatering southern specialty of meat and three. One choice of meat served with three vegetables and a slice of cornbread. Most meat and threes were only open for the noon meal, which southerners call dinner. But food at Vernon May's was so good, they couldn't accommodate just the noon crowd. They were open for breakfast, dinner, and supper. After listening to other diners speculate about the weather, I joined a herd of frantic shoppers at Walmart and gathered enough food to keep me going for a few days. By the time I arrived home at Cat Enright Stables, the sleet had turned into a cold mist and the sun was trying to break through the murky sky. I am, by the way, Cat Enright, owner for the past 7 years of said stables. I'm 29, single, come from mostly Irish stock, and am just beginning to have some national success on the show circuit. As I inched up the icy walk to my farmhouse, arms laden with heavy shopping bags, a wriggly, half-grown puppy burst out of the front doggy door to greet me. I'd found a cold, sodden, shivering Hank sleeping on my porch last November when we returned from the World Championships. He is a sweet and happy soul, and it wasn't long before he moved from the porch into the house. Hank is definitely part beagle. The other parts are anyone's guess. Wriggled Hank, meaning, I'm so happy you're finally home. I tried to be good while I've been waiting. I opened the farmhouse door and Hank and I tumbled into the living room, or what was the left of it. While I had shopped, Hank had happily destroyed what used to be my sofa. After my brain registered what my eyes saw, I realized he had taken the foam stuffing out of the cushions and scattered little pieces all over the room. Bad dog, bad dog, I yelled, shaking my finger at Hank and dropping a bag of groceries in the process. It would have to be the bag with the eggs and pickles in it. I was so mad I felt like shaking Hank instead of my finger, but when I approached to toss him out of the house, Hank rolled on his back and wagged his tail. I never could figure out how he could wag his tail so joyfully while he lay upside down. Okay, I relented, but you have to help clean up. Hank knows I'm a sucker for a tail-wagging dog. He jumped up and contributed to the project by running circles around me, making tiny pieces of the sofa's innards airborne in the process. I was too busy grabbing soft, white flying objects out of the air to see that Hank's circles had gradually changed from fun-loving puppy romps to something more on the frantic side. Too late, I realized what it meant. I made a mad dash to grab him, but only got halfway there before Hank showered his intentions into the furnace floor grate. That's when I knew I was having a bad morning. This was not the first time Hank had watered the furnace, but he had never before been quite so generous. The fragrance of warm dog urine quickly permeated the house. Dog pee in a potentially explosive gas device. I should call the gas company. The lady who answered the phone has a southern drawl, deep enough that I could barely understand her, but she said she could send someone right out. That was a surprise. With luck, I thought I should be able to sleep in my own freshly scented bedroom that night. I opened the door and into the mist and dumped Hank outside, knowing he'd happily make a beeline for the dryness of the barn. Peering into the wet murk, I knew I'd be happy if we had an increase in temperature. With Nashville's unpredictable weather, that wasn't impossible, but then again, a hurricane wouldn't surprise me either. In the meantime, I didn't want to spend another minute in my now pungent home, so I cleaned up the broken eggs, the pickles, and the broken pickle jar. Then I put the rest of the groceries away, threw on my barn jacket, and followed Hank to the stable. At the door of the barn, Joe Gardner presided over a snow shovel, aided by an apologetic tail-wagging Hank. As I approached, John put the shovel aside and helped me over a treacherous ridge of ice that had collected in front of the door. He wore a heavy olive-green parka, tan Carhartt pants, knee-high muck boots with several colorful layers of socks pinking over the top, and a huge fur-lined cap that looks as if it might have been daily wear somewhere in Siberia. His liquid brown eyes twinkled in spite of the weather. Well, I said in lieu of a greeting, you're the only one I've seen this morning who looks as if he's enjoying all of this. I wondered as I spoke if John had grown up in a colder climate, as he seemed not to mind ice or snow, though he didn't seem to mind heat and sun either. Although I'd known him for almost 3 years, my assistant was still an enigma. He called one day to say he wanted to take a look at the barn and horses. It was a slow day, so I told him to come on over. 2 hours later, he was moving his things into the small apartment I had recently built in the loft of the barn. Although we now work together every day, I didn't know much more about him than I did 3 years ago, except that I couldn't get along without him. "Some things," he said with a grin that split his strong features of his face, "ought to be appreciated. The ice, for instance. Turn around." His gloved hand spun me and I found I was facing a fairyland. The sun had finally broken through just over the roof line of the house and illuminated both it and the ice-covered pasture. It was too beautiful for words. When I bought my farm about 7 years ago, it featured a 70-year-old run-down farmhouse on 20 acres, complete with a tobacco barn that needed a new roof. In the last few years, I had done well enough to add the barn, refence some of the property, paint, build a much-needed covered riding arena, and make minor repairs to the house. But much more needed to be done. In the ice-filtered sunlight, though, the old place looked enchanting. I watched until I saw a car make its way slowly up the drive. I'd completely forgotten about my 10 o'clock riding class. With a sigh, I turned from the sparkling scene and went into the converted stall we use as an office. I needed some thinking time to prepare for my students. As I walked in, the phone office rang. I debated answering and regretted my decision the moment I lifted the receiver. "Shopping malls," cried a familiar voice. "It's perfect." "No, no shopping malls," I said, rolling my eyes around and unzipping my jacket at the same time. "No cheap promotional stunts, Agnes. Do you understand?" "Yes, of course I understand, dear, but certainly you can see the advantages." "No." "Oh, pooh," she replied. "You don't actually mean that, do you?" "Agnes, I've had a rough morning. I can't deal with this right now, but I can tell you that no horse in my care will ever be displayed at a shopping mall where the general public can come to gawk." Agnes was silent for a moment. Unfortunately, the moment didn't last. "Cat, dear, please listen. You know you have to promote to keep your name. Agnes is a wonderful person, and I never forget she owns 2 horses on my barn and therefore has a vested interest in how I promote these horses. If that weren't the case, I wouldn't put up with her, but as she is the most exasperating woman I've ever met. In front of the public, and then their horses, such wonderful creatures. Why, if little girls were to lay on their eyes on my sweet psychic Sally Blue." "Agnes, Sally is a horse. She's not psychic." "Of course she is, dear. You remember last fall, the world championships? Every day Sally bumped something blue with her nose. Blue is a color of champions. Sally knew that she was going to win that class." Agnes, who saw her 70th birthday last year, had dyed her short, spiky hair electric blue in honor of both the championships and her horse's name, Sally Blue. If she hadn't have gotten blue-tinted lenses in her bifocals, she never would have worked. I reminded myself that Agnes always paid her bills on time and never complained about the fees, and I didn't even mind that she carried the ashes of her 3 dead husbands around with her in her purse and talked to them all the time. Although it sometimes made having a conversation with her difficult, as you never knew who she was talking to. "Cat, are you listening? Ask Sally. The shopping malls are a great idea. You want me to ask one of the horses I train if it's a good idea to display her at a shopping mall?" Agnes was out there, but this was a bit much even for her. "You know the grubby kids will poke at her and try to climb into her stall, and tired mothers will ignore their little monsters who are pulling Sally's tail, and sooner or later, one of the kids will get trampled and we'll get sued." Tact is not one of my better qualities. I was afraid my outburst would cause me to lose a good client and, if I were honest, a good friend, so I tried again. "Agnes, it's not the direction we need to go. Today is Monday. Barely. Drive down Saturday for lunch and we'll figure out a great promotion." Agnes was silent again. This made twice in a single conversation, probably a new record. "I'm only looking out for you," she said in a small voice. "I know, and you are so wonderful for all that you do for me. Now go think up some fun ideas." I hung up the phone wondering if it was possible for Agnes to come up with anything remotely reasonable.